Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Today's episode of Hack the Entrepreneur is brought to you by DesignCrowd, a website that helps startups and small businesses outsource or crowdsource custom graphics, logos, and web design from over 500,000 designers around the world. Check out designcrowd.com/hack. That's designcrowd.com/hack to learn more and receive a special $100 VIP offer when you start your next project. That's designcrowd.com/hack. Hey, hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for joining me today. I am your host, John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. My guest today is an investor, author, speaker, and an entrepreneur. If there is such a thing as being born an entrepreneur, then my guest today fits this description. Starting his first mini venture when he was just 8 years old and continuing on throughout his teens, he jumped headfirst into the real estate business, buying and selling real estate at a furious pace. But then the crash hit and he was forced to reassess his business and his life. He is now the founder at Thrive Make Money Matter, an annual conference designed to teach entrepreneurs how to dominate in business and in life, while making the world a better place. Now, let's hack Cole Hatter. Today's episode of Hack the Entrepreneur is brought to you by Braintree. You remember your first dollar you made? Now you want to grow and make your millionth or your billionth. Have you found the right payments partner to grow with you? Braintree lets you accept every way to pay, from PayPal to Apple Pay and everything in between. All it takes is one simple integration, and it doesn't matter what currency your customers use because Braintree lets you accept over 130 of them. To learn more about how you and your company can grow with Braintree, visit braintreepayments.com/hack. That's braintreepayments.com/hack. Check it out now. We are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur, and today we have a very, very special guest. Cole, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, John.
Absolutely, my pleasure. This is going to be a lot of fun, I can tell.
Yeah, me too.
So let's jump into it. Cole, as an entrepreneur, what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
You know, looking over my career, I think it's just that I ask questions and I believe I can learn from anybody. I think that a lot of entrepreneurs, especially beginners, are obsessed with consuming content from like Richard Branson or Tony Robbins or people who are iconic and are kind of known in the entrepreneurial community as being these thought leaders. But, you know, I literally just this morning returned a rental car. We were down in Mexico yesterday. I was returning the rental car. And as I'm asking questions from the guy behind the counter, I learned two or three things about how enterprise runs their business. And so I look at every single interaction as something I can take away. And I think that's definitely unique. And I think that that's helped me tremendously that I go into every interaction as, what can I learn? Even if it's just a little something, what can I learn and take away from this interaction?
I love that. It's kind of a really sort of humbling way to go about the world too. Not that like, I know more than this person working at enterprise, obviously.
Yeah. And so, I mean, as an entrepreneur, we're so much self-taught. Even those that go off to school, get their MBAs from Harvard, but then go and create their business. So much of it is being pioneered individually with what works for us as an individual and then within our niche or our industry. And so there isn't one main platform other than broad mindset concepts that will help us get from where we are to where we want to be. But it can just be the conversation with the dude that's getting paid hourly to rent cars at enterprise that gives you that one idea that, you know, being modified to what fits for you can kind of separate you or differentiate yourself in the marketplace. So anyway, bottom line is, yeah, I think that's my biggest contributor to my success thus far is that I'm always learning from everyone in any capacity.
Yeah, so that's cool. I like this. And the way I've heard it like sort of said before is that like looking at every time you're in a business, trying to like understand the mechanics behind it, how it works. And you're saying that with enterprise, but do you also, like, I think you seem to mean like kind of anywhere. It doesn't have to be business, probably because there's a huge personal sort of aspect to, like, personal development aspect just to becoming an entrepreneur, right? And being good.
Yeah, totally.
Rather than just transactions.
One of the greatest pieces of advice I've ever been given is to pay attention. And very broad, but when you really think about it, it's pretty profound. And so whether it be life, you know, my parents, I'm blessed to say that they've been married for 45 years. So instead of just calling him mom and dad, pay attention to how my father treats my mother, because being married 5 years myself, they got 40 years on me that I can learn from. So from the personal life's application, like you were just talking about, to business, you know, I've studied McDonald's. I have nothing to do with the food industry at all, but I want to run a systematic business that doesn't rely on me, but relies on systems. And from a franchise perspective, McDonald's is the most successful that's ever been. So even though I'm not selling hamburgers or french fries, I can look how they automate things and apply that to my business life as well. So I would say, as a general concept, one of the best pieces of advice I've ever been given is pay attention. And there's so much we can learn from, whether it be personal development or business, you know, acumen or business application. And so, yeah, I love that.
I love that too. Pay attention. Couldn't make it more simple.
Right.
Awesome. So, Cole, let's go back if we can. You've been at this game of entrepreneurship for quite some time now. And oftentimes I find going through this journey, we don't really realize when it is, but looking back, there seems to be this time in every entrepreneur's life when they've realized one of two things, that either they had this calling to make this huge difference in the world, or, as mostly seems to be the case, they just found they couldn't work for somebody else anymore. So could you tell me what side of the fence you see yourself on, and then take us back to when you discovered this about yourself?
I think I'm both. Can I sit on the fence? Is that allowed?
Of course it is.
So my first taste of entrepreneurship was, I think, 8 or 9 years old. It was Christmas time, and I wanted the pride of being able to buy my family presents on my own. And so we were at the mall, and they were selling mistletoe in the mall. And I was like, dude, this stuff grows in the trees for free by my house. So I went home, climbed a tree, knocked down as much mistletoe as I could, tied a little red bow around it, and went door to door and sold it, you know, one for $3, two for five, and made enough money that I could personally buy my family presents. And so that was the first realization that I can do something to generate income by myself. And then, you know, I'm 8, so I went through school and all that good stuff. And then my other real taste of entrepreneurship, of having to, like, you know, pay taxes and employ people, not just selling mistletoe door to door, was 21. And that was a result of almost necessity. I was in a wheelchair for a while. I got in a really bad car accident, and I had to learn how to walk again. I had a traumatic brain injury, so I had to learn how to learn again. So I went through about a year of having to relearn life again. And thank God, as of today, I'm 100% healthy. But in that year of uncertainty, would I walk again? Would I have learning problems or any of that? I realized once again, holy cow, I need to be able to create my own income. I can't ever rely on an employer to employ me. At the time of my accident, I was a firefighter. So from a wheelchair, firefighting doesn't work anymore. And I realized again, I need to become financially self-sufficient. Whether someone ever wants to hire me again or not, I've got to make money. And that's when I turned and went all in as far as entrepreneurship. That was 21 years old. And so what I found is, you know, out of having to do it with really having no other options, but then choosing to stay in it now 11 years later, is for all of those reasons. I just can't work for somebody else. And I guess the specific question is, what was the moment of time when you realized one or the other? It was actually in Mexico, which is funny because I was just there yesterday. I had been down there for 7 months living there full time. And I realized, having made a bunch of money and then in that season having lost it all, that what a shame it was that I'd made a ton of money, but only bought stuff that then when I lost it all, had to sell the stuff and had nothing to show for my success. And I said, you know what? I'm going to go back to America and I'm going to make as much money or even more than I ever have. And I'm going to do something meaningful with it. I'm going to make my money matter this time. So heaven forbid I lose it all again, there's at least people in lives and some type of significance or impact that I've made that will last whether my money's around or not anymore. And so the second question is, was it because I feel calling to, like, have this greater purpose? And I would say that was only about 5 years ago. So 6 years into my entrepreneurial career, I realized, you know what? I should be using my business to make the world a better place. So that was a big, long answer of a whole spectrum, but that was from 8 years old to now 32 years old, the different seasons of entrepreneurship I've had and realizations along the way.
I love it. I love it. And it's funny because that seems to be oftentimes how it works is, I mean, when you first go into it, you just make money, right? You just need to make money. And because you either can't work for somebody like mentally or physically anymore. But then as it evolves, you realize that just the money is never enough. And I think that's when you have to start trying to make that difference, however we choose to make it.
You know, and I think that that's an important thing you brought up. What you just said, make that difference in however you choose. There's no one way, and I wouldn't presume to tell you or anyone else what they should do with their money. But, you know, I will say this. And then it's also interesting for people who are just starting, who haven't really had money yet. It's like, oh, well, it's so easy for all these millionaires to say having money doesn't matter. But it's like, I found that out when I was broke. And so just for some context, I entered into real estate. That's what I did at 21 to 26. And I was in Southern California when real estate was booming. So I didn't need to know what I was doing. My strategy, John, was to buy a house, count to 10, sell it, and make $100,000. And so at 23, 25 years old, making big six figures, like $500,000 plus a year, guess what I did with it? At 23, 25, 26 years old, I bought Escalades, I put TVs in them, I bought wakeboard boats, and I did what the world told me rich people are supposed to do. And I spent every dollar I had. And so when I lost the boats, you know, it wasn't like cars being repossessed in foreclosure, but when I had to fire sale everything, because 2008 in America, we had a recession and real estate collapsed. So my income went from huge to nothing, literally in a matter of 4 to 5 months. And so I had to sell everything in a second. It was in that season of no longer having money that I realized, you know what? When I had money, I shouldn't have been such an a-hole about it. I should have done something with it. And so what that application looks like is to each their own. But I would challenge anybody listening to this, whether you're having tremendous success or just getting started, figure out some way along the way to do things that matter, make your money matter, so that, you know, in the seasons of ups and downs, or if you only go up forever, like Zuckerberg style, where you just make billions and never look back, right on. But I challenge you to try it. Buying cars and houses is cool, but feeding hungry children or whatever it looks like for you is better. And you'll have a better satisfaction with your work ethic and income by doing something powerful for others than ever buying stuff for yourself, period.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting because when you mentioned the real estate, like buy a house, count to 10, and then sell it and make a bunch of money, it's funny when we're in those things, like there's so much luck. Like you were kind of born at the right time and place that you were there when that was happening, right?
Totally.
You capitalized on it, and not everybody did, but there's so much luck to be in that place at that time and then capitalize on it. Yet we don't usually think that at the time. We're just kings of the world. This is all us.
Oh, totally. Oh my gosh. I remember I'm so arrogant. I'm like 24, 25. And I asked my dad to be my business partner because he was unhappy in his job. So I was like, dude, I'm getting rich. You need to come be my partner. This is like stealing from children. Like, come on, let's do this. So my dad was my business partner and we just had a house sell that, you know, paid us like 60, 70 grand. And as a firefighter, you were making $42,000 a year, you know, as a rookie. And I remember laughing to my dad thinking like something like, why doesn't everyone do this? Like, why the heck anyone go get a job? That's the dumbest thing in the world. Everyone should just do real estate. And then I realized my luck ran out. 2008 came and whoops, maybe I actually needed to know what I was doing.
Funny how that works.
Oh yeah. I had a big wake up call.
All right. So at the beginning, your one thing is asking questions and you believe you can learn from anyone. Now, every business expert tells us about this 80-20 rule, right? Do 20% of the work, get 80% of the results, do what you're good at and delegate the rest. Cole, can you tell me something that you're absolutely not good at in your business?
Well, really two things. Number one, I suck with details. Absolutely suck. So I've had to bring in people like specifically finances. The way that I would prepare for taxes is make sure I'm making more than I'm spending. And I got into some tax trouble in my first 2 or 3 years of business. Not that I was running from taxes or whatever. I just didn't know how to be prepared for it. As an employee, you know, in high school, I was waiting tables and stuff. And as a firefighter, all that was handled for me. And I even got money back in April. Now, all of a sudden, I was responsible to, here in America, you know, do my quarterly filings, minutes, and all that. So I got some hot water that cost me money to fix, of course. I'm good now. But I learned very quickly that when it comes to details, specifically finances, I just don't want to take time to learn it. I don't want to. I bought, not TurboTax, QuickBooks. I bought QuickBooks, and for like 2 weeks, every dollar I spent, I bought a pack of gum, bam, it was in QuickBooks. By the third week, I wasn't even logging in anymore, right? So it's like, I can't even use the platforms that are there for someone like myself to stay organized. It's just not my strength. I suck at details. So I've brought those people in now where literally I have weekly accounting done for me. I have a bookkeeper that every Friday takes care of where every cent went and catalogs it accordingly. So come April here in America, when we file our taxes, everything's done. It's as simple as just sending my CPA an email that has to the day all my accounting taken care of, and I've never been in tax trouble since. The second thing I suck about is finishing. I've got like crazy ADD. I've got crazy energy. I'm crazy creative. So I'll start 8 things and finish none of them. So something I've had to work very hard at is follow through. Some people are naturally gifted at it. I'm gifted at starting. I'm not afraid of anything, but then I'll get bored of it or start something else and forget. And so I have like 9,000 things. And this is my personal life too. In my house, I have like 18 projects right now that I've started and just left it, you know, like halfway done. And I just suck at follow through. I need to continue to work hard on that.
Yeah, I love that. And it seems like you realized with the tax issue that you, like how you realized it too late. Like you had already got into some trouble. Then you're like, I got to get the, like outsource this somehow and get this off my plate because I'm terrible at it. So do you think you'll, that learning of knowing or realizing your weaknesses before they cause problems, do you think you've figured that out now?
I can say yes until my next weakness bites me in the butt, right? So yeah, I learned the tax thing. And again, I paid taxes. I just didn't pay enough. So
of course,
not only did I have to pay the difference, but then they charge you penalties and interest on the whole amount. So it ended up costing me like $30,000. And so, you know, that was an expensive lesson. People are like, oh, but Cole, you know, weekly bookkeeper is expensive. Honestly, I think I pay like $2,000 for the year to just have this person spend 15 minutes a week, maybe less than that. Maybe like I spend $1,000. I don't even know what I pay, but it's not expensive compared to a $30,000 tax, you know, penalty, right? So it's oftentimes, this is what I always say, what's more expensive, education or ignorance? And for me, ignorance has always been more expensive. Paying the school of hard knocks has always been more expensive than just investing in the right systems or people. So to answer your question, you know, what other things are out there? I don't know yet, but I'm trying to surround myself with people who are better in areas that I'm weak. You know, Gary Vaynerchuk says something you just talked about when you started this segment. You said, you know, knowing your strengths and weaknesses. Gary Vaynerchuk says, triple down on your strengths, outsource your weaknesses. And I think I'm doing that better now than ever. However, you know, the world is evolving. I start new companies, and I know that will happen again, where, you know, something will bite me in the butt. And so it's just important to surround yourself with people who excel in where you're weak.
Yeah, exactly. So let's sort of segue into projects, because you said 18 projects lying around, terrible follow through. But from the time you were in your early 20s, just getting started in business till now and having a team around you, I'm sure that the process of choosing your next project to start and execute on is different. So projects is a loose term, but, and we can use Thrive, Make Money Matter if you want, because that's your big project right now. But I want to know what your process is with all the ideas coming through your own head, from people around you in your network and through your inbox. But how do you, Cole, decide, and whether it's a written or internal gut process, but how do you decide that a project is now worth yours and your team's time, energy, and resources?
I'll talk about step one. So there's obviously, you know, financial viability, making sure all that stuff, right? That's universal for everybody. I'll talk about what maybe is unique to me. The first filter, any idea I get, because I'm full of those, right? Or idea I get pitched, because like you said, yeah, my inbox, I literally have a tab on my website that says, pitch me, no joke. And so I get thousands a year of people pitching me on being a business partner, giving the money or whatever. So the very first filter is I have 11 absolute truths that will, no matter what I do, it can't be loosely, it has to be 100% in alignment with all 11 absolute truths. And if it's 10 out of 11, I will not do it. Because what I found my first, you know, I've had two entrepreneurial seasons. I had the first 5 years, then I spent a year in Mexico, then I've had these last 5 years. So literally 50-50. And the first 5 years were not great. Even though I was making good money, I didn't own a business. My business owned me. And I dreaded my own company that was named after me, that I founded from the ground up. I hated it. I was even envious of my buddies who had jobs, right? Because they could call in sick and I never could. And so what I decided to do in the second season of business is never sell out for money, never pursue an opportunity unless it supported my life instead of my life supporting the business. And so here's one example of an absolute truth. I have to be able to make money from anywhere. So like, let's just say, I think you're up in Canada. Mm-hmm. Let's just say that you had an opportunity for me to make $10 million a year, but I had to sit at a desk in your office 40 hours a week. So I had to move my family up there. I'd tell you not, no, you can make it $100 million. Never. Now, maybe you want me to consult where I could do that through Skype over the phone from anywhere, then maybe that would work. And so one of my 11 absolute truths is I will never, ever be geographically bound. No matter what I'm doing in business, I have to be able to do from anywhere. On the extreme opposite of the spectrum, an example of another one of my 11 truths is I have two beautiful little girls. I have a 6-month-old and a 3-year-old and my beautiful wife. And I have to do things that they will be proud of and that I want them to use. So like, here's an example. I was pitched on an app that uses, you know, GPS, and then it shows you who the other app users are for the sole purpose of seeing who's in your vicinity to, let's just say, casually hang out with one another. So this isn't Tinder. People are like, oh, no, it's not Tinder. This is more recent than that, where someone's like, Cole, this is going to be huge. You can invest in it, you know, seed funding. This isn't even your A series. This is first round. We're going to kill it. And I was like, okay, would that be something that I would be able to explain to my daughters that they would be proud of, that daddy gave the money to an app where people could do those things? And number two, is this something I want them to use? And so absolutely not. Do I ever want my daughters on some app for hooking up with random people? So that's an example. Even though, sadly, with our culture, I probably would have made a lot of money on that. And I could have been like, yeah, I'm not involved. It's just, you know, I gave them money and I get a return. I don't want to fund something like that. So those are two examples of my 11 truths. And that is the first cult litmus test or whatever that has to get 11 out of 11 before I'll even look at financial feasibility, marketplace, et cetera, on whether it economically makes sense. It has to hit all 11 truths.
I like it. And will those 11 truths stay, or are they sort of fluid, as in they'll change probably with you?
You know, that's a great question because, you know, I've only had kids now for 3 years. And so that's a newer one. I'm going to say, just off the cuff, that probably 8 or 9 of them will stay. Like, till I die, I'm going to only work or only do things where I can work from anywhere, right? So I'm going to say about 80% of them at least will be solid. Maybe some, as I evolve as an entrepreneur or you know, circumstances in my life change, can change. But you know, I would say that the majority of them are just, you know, guiding principles from my faith, my upbringing, my belief system, and the type of person I want to be, the type of father and husband I want to be. And none of that will ever change through my life. And I would say at least 8 of the 11 are based off of those principles. So they'll always be the same.
Nice. I love it. All right, Cole, this has been an absolute blast. I want to wrap up with one final question for you. So it's this idea I'm working with calling the entrepreneurial gap. So as entrepreneurs, as dreamers, we tend to project our successes personally always into the future. So at the end of October, when the new conference goes and it's a huge success, or in 6 months when you hit that revenue target, or in 1 year when you change the part of the world that you want to change, that's when you'll see yourself as a success. Yes, yet we both know that right before you achieve those goals, you're going to set 5 bigger ones into the future, which is what we have to do. But from the outside, we look uber successful. And from ourselves, it's like walking towards the horizon. The further you walk, the further away it always gets. And so we end up sometimes in this gap of never quite feeling successful. Cole, you've been at this like from 8 years old, then going through school, doing the traditional route, then a huge accident, and now you've built yourself an amazing business. I would love it if you could stop right now, turn around, look behind you, the highs, the lows, the wins, and the losses, but tell me how you feel about all of it until today.
You know, this is perfect timing. So I think as entrepreneurs, there's just something broken in our heads that it'll never be enough. Like you said, the horizon as we walk towards it just gets further. And I think that's part of the beauty of the commonality we all share, whether we live in Canada, America, South Africa, whether we're in tech or real estate, is that there's just this problem in our minds where we're never satisfied and we're always achieving. And that's where innovation comes from. That's where Uber is built. That's where Microsoft and Apple, Steve Jobs, you know, so I think there's a beautiful brokenness in each of our minds that force us to never be satisfied and never feel successful enough. You know, you can look at it from the negative of we should stop and just enjoy the moment, which of course you should. But at the same time, as far as the 80 to 100 years we have on this earth, we can never become complacent. it's always a stepping stone. It's never an arrival. And so from a financial or business perspective, you know, looking back over my years, I'm proud of where I've come, but I feel like I haven't even gotten started yet. But I think the question was kind of like, what am I proud of? And so the timing is perfect that I have an orphanage in Mexico. And when I lived down there, I started this orphanage 5 years ago, and I go probably once a month. But since my daughters have been born, I've never brought them down there for a bunch of different reasons. And yesterday we did for the very first time. I brought my three-year-old and my six-month-old, my wife, and a couple of my staff down there. And we spent the entire day in my orphanage playing in Mexico. And someone's going to get me emotional again to see my six-month-old was just hanging out. But my three-year-old to be playing in the dirt, playing soccer with soccer balls that she bought for them, and just hanging out with them and looking at them as equals and just loving on them and speaking the four or five words in Spanish she knows to them. That was a proud moment because I wasn't born into money. My dad was a construction worker. My daughter was born into having millions or whatever, right? And so I ask myself, with the type of resources she's going to have as a child, how do I keep her grounded? How do I keep her humble? I don't want to pretend we're broke, but at the same time, I'm not on her 16th birthday going to buy her a freaking Bentley. So like, how do I let her know that we've got extras than most people have to be able to bless others? And seeing my daughter just yesterday playing and loving on these kids is when I said, okay, like this is working. This has been worth it to be in the financial position to do this. And then to have my three-year-old understand that they don't have mommies and daddies. She said something to me coming home. It's going to get me emotional, but she said, daddy, they don't have daddy. So it's like, you're their daddy. And I was just like, oh man, my wife and I, you know, had a tear come down our cheek. So I think that in business, I'll never be satisfied. But if I can teach my little girls how to love others and how to use whatever financial resources that they earn on their own or that daddy and mommy have as not the end game, but the utility or the catalyst to do whatever change it is that they want to live and make in the world, that's success. And so how am I ever going to measure success and be satisfied is that I'm going to live my life that way and then lead by example so that my family, my daughters, and then those around me can say, you know what? There's something that makes sense about making that what success is and not just the amounts of dollars in a bank account or square footage in a house, but the influence, the impact, and the significance we can do in others' lives. I think that's it.
It's a beautiful answer, man. Beautiful answer. I love it.
Yeah, it was a powerful day yesterday. I'm still raw because it was just yesterday. But that's what it is for me, man.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So Thrive Make Money Matter is the conference. It's happening in 1 month down in San Diego, and I would love it if you could tell the listener right now about it.
So it's basically everything we've been talking about. Thrive is, we have 25 speakers. We have Jack Canfield from Chicken Soup for the Soul, John Assaraf, JJ Virgin. We have Luis Ortiz from Million Dollar Listing. Last year, we had Gary Vaynerchuk, Robert Hershevek from Shark Tank. I mean, we're talking monster names who for 3 days teach our audience how to freaking kill it in business from, you know, practical 2 + 2 = 4, do this to get this. But then at the same time, the theme, make money matter, is what we've been talking about on this podcast. Hey, listen, the world will tell you that you just got to go spend your money. And if you have a Ferrari, you know, 458, but now you see that someone has the new 488, you're not going to be satisfied till you get that 488, right? And it's just, that's not what this is about. It's about, here's how to make money and then go make your money matter in whatever way makes sense to you. And so for 3 days, we just teach small business owners and startups how to freaking kill it in business while being in an environment of being taught how to make their business make a difference in the world. Kind of like Tom's Shoes, right? A model where while you're making money, you're making some type of a social impact. And so it's a unique group of us that believe that business isn't, it is a leverage or a utility and, you know, to make a big change in the world. And so that's it. We're getting together in, like you said, the end of October, the 28th, 29th, and 30th down in San Diego, California. And it's basically just a 3-day party of awesome information and awesome people.
That's awesome. Attendthrive.com is the website to find more about it. Cole is at colehatter.com and you can track him down on Twitter at Cole Hatter. I will link to all of that on Hack the Entrepreneur for you so it's easy to find when you get back to your computer. Cole, once again, man, thanks so much for taking the time to stop by. Thanks for being so open and sharing with me. And please just keep doing what you're doing because it's awesome and inspiring to watch.
Yeah, John, I appreciate being on the show, man. And congrats to all your success with your podcast. And thanks for having me, bro. It's been awesome.
Thanks. That was a lot of fun. Cole, thank you so much for joining me. Thank you so much for being so open and sharing with me. And I hope you out there listening and got as much from that conversation as I did. It's been a pretty wild ride that Cole's gone through. I mean, from starting off so young, then going through college, high school, then college, becoming a firefighter, and then dealing with a car accident and crazy injuries, and then through the real estate boom bust, and now with Thrive, make money matter. So attendthrive.com is the website. If you would like to join Cole and some extremely, extremely great speakers and guests down in San Diego, late October 2016, you can go there and check it out at attendthrive.com. I think it's going to be a lot of fun down there. Sure does look like it. And it's beautiful and sunny. It's San Diego. Come on. Attend Thrive. But now we're at the point of the conversation where we need to go back. We need to go back and go through the conversation, kind of pull it apart, see what's there, see what's not there. And so I did. I went back. But it wasn't quite enough. So I went back again. And then I went back one more time. Because there was some of these things that Cole said that really stood out to me. But going through it that last time, there was one thing that Cole said. There was one thing that he said that was so very, very, very clear to me that last time I heard it. It was that one thing. Did you get it? Did you hear it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
Oftentimes, this is what I always say, what's more expensive, education or ignorance? And for me, ignorance has always been more expensive. Paying the school of hard knocks has always been more expensive than just investing in the right systems or people. So,
and that's the hack. Cole. I love this. And this one really, really hits home. And unless you've had an ignorant mistake that you've made and had it cost you so much money, it maybe won't ring as true. And maybe you won't even listen to Cole or myself. But I'm going to take this back, because what's more expensive, education or ignorance? And it's funny because they actually become one and the same. But look, 10 years ago, we were selling our first house. We had lived out in Vancouver, British Columbia, and we were selling our first house. And I had got some like work done at one point, and these kids I hired to like fix the roof or change the roof, but I was busy running my business. So I wasn't at home. I just came home and like saw them quickly and paid them, and they did it completely wrong and completely terribly. And I didn't even realize it, but we went to sell the house, and I remember being on my bike and they were doing the inspection, and my real estate agent called, and I was on my bike and my wife was with me. And I got the phone call and I was like, oh, good, it's going to be done. We're selling the house and it's going to be great. And he's like, John, what's wrong with the roof? I'm like, oh, nothing's wrong with the roof. The roof's brand new. He's like, yeah, but there's no wood. There's just like, we can see shingles when you look through into the attic. And so I don't know much about roofs, and maybe you don't either, but apparently they had like taken off the wood and then not replaced plywood. And so there was literally just big holes, and they just nailed like shingles into other shingles, and it was just sitting on the roof. And I had no idea, because I was being completely ignorant and busy running a business and not paying attention to this. And so we failed. We failed the inspection. The buyers backed out. And I remember going back like an hour later and talking to I believe his name was Ryan, my real estate agent at the time. And I was just like, oh my goodness, because there was another offer that was going to come in, but it was like $30,000 less than this one. And I remember being like, oh my goodness, I can't believe that. And Ryan was just like, John, this is something you just have to learn. Just think of this as the price of education. Like, to go to university, I'm in Canada, so it would cost $30,000. He's like, think of this as you went and got another degree in university and it cost you $30,000. Literally think of this as an education, because then you will take it with you. And look at me, 10 years later, I'm telling you this story because it really resonates and turns into that. And you can think that, oh, education is expensive, but no, Ignorance is truly, truly, truly expensive. And it's this idea of thinking that you know everything, thinking that you can handle everything. I thought that I could handle my business, handle my family, and also like this renovation of a house before we sold it. It cost me $30,000 to figure out that I was completely ignorant of my deficiencies and weaknesses in those aspects. You know what? I've sold 2 houses since then, and I've never made that mistake again. And I don't think I will ever make it again. So when Cole says, what's more expensive, education or ignorance? Ignorance is absolutely more expensive. Invest in the education that you need to do the things and accomplish the things that you want to, and invest in the right people around you. Whether that means joining a mastermind or hiring proper employees, whatever it is, it's worth the investment. Trust me, ignorance is very, 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 very expensive, and you don't want to have to pay that price. Thank you, Cole. That was fun.